Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Captain Hunter's Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. I really appreciate your time, your effort, your energy. A lot of feedback's been coming in and I truly appreciate it. Trying to make the show better for you and just trying to give out some information. Today's episode, we're going to talk about this situation, mass shooting, gun violence. This is probably going to be part of a two-part series into gun violence, mass shootings, and I'm also going to talk a little bit about the racial implications of gun control and that particular history. Stay tuned and we're going to get into all of it. So let's just jump into it right now. So like I said, this is going to be part of a two-part episode, maybe even more parts than that, but I want to really talk about gun violence. Because this podcast is dedicated to helping the community and the officers get together, we have to really get to the facts of the matter and really try to understand each other's perspectives and where each other is coming from. If there's an issue where the public is not seeing eye to eye with the police officers, then the focus and the goal of this podcast is to get those two particular groups in harmony and do what we can in order to facilitate change. Now, I really wanted to do this episode in relationship to the recent situation that happened in Virginia Beach, Virginia, in which people were injured and or killed in the mass shooting that happened there. I think it's tragic. We all think it's tragic. I mentioned this in about a 7-minute video that I posted on Instagram and Facebook. So you guys can check that out under my pages there, Captain L. Hunter, Big L. Hunter. That's my Instagram, Big L. Hunter. My Twitter is Captain L. Hunter. So I'll try to post things there and just try to keep up on the latest and current events and things like that. In line with what we saw in Virginia, you know, I really started to think about it. You know, this is a problem that we see that's going on. And the problem that I have, number one, is that it's going on. These types of incidents are going on with seemingly increasing frequency. And we'll get into that in a little bit. And the second problem that I have is that we are growing numb to it. We're kind of glossing over it when it comes to our news feeds, when we see it on our TV. When reading in the paper, or when we hear a podcast like this, we kind of just gloss over the fact this is a problem. This is going on and this is occurring within the society that we live in. And I think that if we're going to be more of a fair, equitable, trusting, and more civilized society, then I think that we really need to get to the heart of what's going on here. So as I'm researching this topic and I'm looking into it, you know, like I said, I did that video. Really, I just kind of went off the top of my head, but obviously for the podcast, which I really wanted to kind of take my time. When you really read through some things and you really look at things that you agree with, when you're reading through things, you should really look to see what you agree with and also read things that you don't agree with and see what other people's perspectives are. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 other perspectives, if possible. I don't subscribe to this left-right dynamic that we have going on in this country. I don't like it. I think it's very divisive. And I think that much of the problems we have cannot be summed up in either or, black and white issues, right? There's a lot of shades of gray in between those black and white issues. And so we really have to read through some things. And it takes work, it takes effort, it takes time. But I think in the long run, it pays off because we become a more informed society. And the more informed we are, the better decisions that we can make. We really have to read through some things. So as I'm reading through some things, I didn't want this, obviously, just to be about me ranting. I didn't want this episode to be about me simply ranting and raving about what I think should happen. But I really want to get some facts, some data, and see what the best methods are for going forward. So how we as a society can fix this problem. If the problem can even be fixed, right? Reading through some of the things, I'm very pessimistic about our chances of fixing some of these problems. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't try. That doesn't mean we shouldn't minimize the problems. That doesn't mean that we should not make every single effort and attempt to fix problems and to decrease any type of potential for harm and danger. The first problem that I have, as I mentioned in the video, so the first problem that I have is the problem of the definition. If we can't come to some type of understanding of what we're talking about, then we're going to have a hard time trying to fix any type of problem. What are you talking about, Cap? What I'm talking about is the fact that government agencies, news outlets, academics can't or have not developed a single source or single definition of what we're talking about here. Mass shootings, mass killings, or active shooters, right? That's what we're talking about. There is no coherent, consistent, definitive definition that one person can go to the dictionary and read about. And so therefore, this creates a serious problem because what Congress may be talking about may not be what academics are talking about. that may not be what news outlets are talking about. And then there's the problem of the pro-gun advocacy groups, and then there's the pro-restrictive rights advocacy groups, which are seeking to limit the introduction and limit the amount of people who are able to possess a handgun within modern civil society. And so, and this also, this problem that I'm talking about does not just stem from the United States of America. It stems all across the world, particularly in first world countries, as we're going to deal with. Now, this problem of active shootings, mass killings, happens in less developed countries as well. Yes, but for the purpose of our research, what we're talking about, I really just want to kind of stick to mostly first world type of countries, and that'll become apparent why I'm sticking to that in a little while as we go along. But just stay tuned. Reading from this place, FAS.org. This is the Congressional Research Service, Mass Murder with Firearms, Incidents and Victims from 1999 to 2013. This can be accessed online. None of the information I'm giving is super secret scholarly, you know, articles. We have to pay to get the articles. You know, I'm just doing Google searches like everyone else. There are some times and some incidents where I have to go through my school library to find out some different articles. And I will, when I mention those, obviously I mention them, But here's the problem. Here's the problem that we have is that, number one, there's no definitive definition. According to the FBI, the term mass murderer has been defined generally as a multiple homicide incident in which four or more victims are murdered within one event and in one or more locations in a close geographical proximity. Based on this definition, for the purpose of this report, mass shooting is defined as multiple homicide incident in which four or more victims are murdered with firearms within one incident and in one or more locations in close proximity. Do you see the problem with that? This is basing it on a multiple homicide event, incident in which four or more people are killed. So think about that definition just for a second. You're sitting at a restaurant, some crazy gunman comes in and he starts shooting up the place. He kills one person and then 20 people are injured and then flees the scene or then takes his own life. This, according to this FBI definition, is not a mass murderer. It may not even be an active shooter, according to these definitions. And these definitions, why this is important is, these definitions are what drives the research. So if you're going to do research as an academic or as a news outlet, you could not count this as a mass murder event because you only killed one person. But of course, everybody in there had to duck under a table. Everybody in there had to take some type of proactive action in order to save their own life. They had to duck under a table, they had to lock themselves in the bathroom, run out the back door, they had to do whatever they had to do in order to save their life. Is that not an active shooter? Is not his attempt, their attempt, to kill someone a problem? So that's one of the biggest problems that I find in going forward. Take a look at the RAND.org, R-A-N-D.org. I think this is pretty much pro-right organization, but I'm not too sure about that. But regardless, like I said before, you really should read things that you agree with and read things that you don't agree with. Read a little bit about this. Right in the 1980s, the Federal Bureau of Investigation defined mass murderer as someone who killed four or more people in a single incident. However, the government has never defined mass shooting. This is definitely different. Mass murder, mass shooting as a separate category. And there is yet no universally accepted definition of the term. Thus, media outlets, academic researchers, and law enforcement agencies frequently use different definitions when discussing mass shootings, which can complicate our understanding of mass shooting trends and their relationship to gun policy. The table, although there is no official standard for the casualty threshold that distinguishes mass shooting from other violent crimes involving a firearm, a common approach to the literature is to adopt FBI's criteria for a mass murderer and set a casualty threshold of 4 fatalities by firearm, excluding the offender or offenders. So you get 2 people who get killed, and that's not going to count. How does that make sense? Once again, you're sitting at your kid's school play, and somebody just starts blazing away. They kill 2 people, and that's not going to count for your FBI statistics. It's not going to count for academic research. It's not going to count for news media outlets. It's not going to count because it's not 4 more people, excluding initial gunmen. I don't think this makes any sense. We need to really develop some type of definition as to what we're talking about. There's another source of information called the Gun Violence Archive. I think it's .org. Gun Violence Archive. You guys can read about that. It defines mass shooting as an incident. This is a mass shooting. Their definition, according to the Gun Violence Archive, mass shooting as an incident in which 4 or more victims, excluding the shooter, are injured or killed. The mass shooting tracker set a criterion of 4 or more people injured or killed, including the shooter. So there's different definitions going on. The problem I have with the Gun Violence Archive is that they include, now this is obviously a pro-gun checker kind of organization, right? Where they don't want people to have guns in mass, essentially, right? They want to limit and restrict gun access to guns. So this particular website will include family homicides, gang violence, robberies, things like that. So you get a robbery, somebody shoots 3, 4, 5 people. That would count under the gun violence archive. So that's why you have to be really specific in dealing with what we're talking about. I'm not talking about gangs who are going out there doing gang initiations or shooting each other up in places like that. I'm not talking about gun violence at bar, you know, after hours at 2 o'clock in the morning where fight breaks out, next thing you know, people start popping off rounds and then 5 or 6 people get hit by rounds. Maybe one person died. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about here is our ability to go to college campuses, our abilities to go to schools, our abilities to go to the mall and not have some crazy lunatic force us to run out the back door in a mass hurry because he starts going off with his AK-47 or whatever have you. So that's what we really have to really isolate the definition and get to what we're talking about here. This is the first problem that I'm having, is that there is such a problem with the definition as to what we're talking about. And so if we can't develop any type of definition, then we'll never really get to understand what we're talking about and really never be able to come up with a solution to what we're talking about. So let's read about just a little bit about the psychology. Now, this is something that the academics are really looking into why this phenomenon is going on. They've been doing it for some time, but in order to really get it right, in order for the academics to really hone in on the problem and understand and isolate the problem, they really, first of all, have to have this basic definition that everyone agrees upon. That way they can target and isolate those perpetrators if they live, and they can isolate them even if they die, right? They can go through their Facebook feeds, they can go through their social media feeds, they can go through their archives and things like that, and then do a little bit of research. So let's get into the mind of a mass murderer. And I'm taking this from Psychology Today. So Psychology Today talks about the mind of a mass murderer. Alan J. Francis, MD, wrote an article back in 2014 in which he's looking at what we're talking about today, these active shooters, mass shooters. He quotes a Dr. James Knoll, a leading forensic psychiatrist with special expertise in mass murderers. He talks about the psychological profiles, if you will, to help law enforcement, to help academics understand what's going on. 2013, the Congressional Research Service issued a report on public mass shootings. Congressional Research Service used as its working definition occurring in relatively public places involving 4 or more deaths. Here's that problem again, right? The CRS identified 78 public mass shootings in the U.S. since 1983 that had resulted in 547 deaths and over 1,000 casualties. So it's mostly, the perpetrators are mostly young males who act alone or carefully planning the event. They often have long-standing fascination with weapons and have collected large stores of them. The shootings usually occur in public places and during the daytime. The murderer is an injustice collector who spends a great deal of time feeling resentful about real or imagined rejections and ruminating on past humiliations. He is a paranoid worldview with chronic feelings of social persecution, envy, and grudge holding. He is tormented by beliefs that privileged others are enjoying life's all-you-can-eat buffet while he must peer through the window, an outside loner always looking in. Aggrieved and entitled, he longs for power and rends to obliterate what he cannot have. Since satisfaction is unattainable, lawfully and realistically, he is reduced to violent fantasy and pseudo-power. He creates and enacts odious screenplays of grandiose and public retribution. Like a child who upends the checkerboard when he does not like the way the game is going, he seeks to destroy others by apparent failures to recognize and meet his needs. Fury, deep despair, callous selfishness eventually crystallizes in the fantasy of violent rage on a scale that will draw attention. The mass murderer typically expects to die and frequently does in what amounts to be a mass homicide, personal suicide. He may kill himself or script matter so that he will be killed by police. The frequency of mental disorders and mass murders is controversial because it's not clear what draws the line between good, between bad and mad. So this is just some of the ideas that was written in Psychology Today. This was written in 2014. He's quoting, and the author is quoting from some of the work by Dr. Knoll, who wrote this in 2013. These are some of the ideas that are going on in them. Let me just talk a little bit about, is this a first world problem or is this an idea that is simply isolated to the United States from PolitiFact. So this organization is always geared towards looking into the truth of the matter about what a politician says. Is what a politician speaking truth to what's going on? 2015, they wrote an article titled, "Is Barack Obama Correct That Mass Killings Don't Happen in Other Countries?" This is written in June 22nd, 2015. President Obama made a statement after the African-American church in Charleston was shot up. This is what Barack Obama said. "Now is the time for mourning and for healing. But let's be clear. At some point, we as a country will have to reckon with the fact that this type of mass violence does not happen in other advanced countries. It doesn't happen in other places with this kind of frequency, and it is our power to do something about it." Now, first of all, I agree with it is in our power to do something about it. We have to do something about it. We'll talk about a little bit of that later on. What this article particularly did was go through a lot of statistics. And if you read through the article, it will give you some examples or samples of what has happened in other countries. July 22nd, 2011, 80 people were killed in Norway when Anders Breivik, the extremist, killed a bunch of people. March 11, 2009, Germany, teenage gunman killed 15 people. Most of the victims were children and teachers when he opened up fire in a classroom at a secondary school. September 23rd, 2008, Finland, a gunman shot 10 people to death after he opened fire in a classroom in a school of hospitality, killed a bunch of teachers, and the shooter burned the victims' bodies. Right after going through some numbers, it lists a lot of numbers in this particular article. It says, still the U.S. doesn't rank number one. At 0.15 mass shooting fatalities per 100,000 people, the U.S. had a lower rate than Norway, 1.3, Finland, 0.34, and Switzerland, 1.7 per 100,000. We'll note that all of these countries had big attacks at relatively small populations, which have pushed up their per capita rates. In Norway, that single attack in 2011 left 67 dead by gunfire, plus an additional bomb casualties. Finland had two attacks, one that killed 8 and one that killed 10, and Switzerland had one incident that killed 14. Still, while the United States did rank in the top one-third of the list, the fact that three other countries exceeded the U.S. using this method of comparison does weaken Obama's claim that it doesn't happen in other places with this kind of frequency. In at least three countries, the data shows it does. Right. So the bigger the population, when they talk about this per 100,000, the bigger the population, the more frequently these situations happen. At the end of the article from PolitiFact, the data clearly shows that it does happen. These types of phenomena are happening in other countries, in at least three of them. There's evidence that the rate of killings and mass shootings events occurred at high per capita rates in the United States between 2000 and 2014. The only partial support for Obama's claim is that the per capita gun incident fatality rate in the United States does rank in a one-third of the 11 country study. On balance, we rate the claim mostly false. New York Post 2018, another article from New York Post 2018, America doesn't actually lead the world in mass shootings. There's a guy by the name of Adam Lankford. Lankford's study reported that over 47 years, there were 90 public mass shootings in the United States and 202 in the rest of the world. Lankford hasn't released his list of shootings or even a number of cases by country or year. We and others, both in academia and the media, have asked Lankford for his list, only to be declined. He has also declined to provide lists of news sources and languages he used to compile his list of cases. These omissions are important because Lankford's entire conclusion would fall apart if he undercounted foreign cases due to lack of news coverage and language barriers. Language cites a 2012 New York Police Department report, which claims it's nearly comprehensive in its coverage of recent decades. Then the article goes on to quote from the Crime Prevention Research Center. We know of no way to discover most of the cases where four people have been shot to death in an incident in Africa or any other parts of the world in the 1960s, 70s, 80s, or 90s. And that is the reason the new study is just looked at in the past 15 years from 1998 to 2012, or the 47 years he examined. So the reason that this particular article that is important is because this was written by a couple of people last year to August 30th, 2018. And it takes a look at, once again, at the former President Obama's statements concerning that this type of incident is unparalleled in the world and that we are number one with that. It's simply and plainly just can't be verified. And this was an opinion piece in the New York Post, so take that for what it's worth. So we do know that these type of incidents do happen in other places. as I said in the video that I made, it's not just about shootings. This type of mass killing is going on all over the place. In May 2019, there was a knife-wielding maniac who ran through some schools, I believe it was, in Japan, killing people. Type in mass stabbings, search engine. A Wikipedia page may pop up, and it has a number of violent stabbings that have occurred, from train stations to school massacres to malls to synagogues. You know, this type of mass killing is not relegated to guns. And this is the problem that I think that everybody should really understand, is this is not just a gun problem. So the answer that many people will come up with is that, okay, well, if we just stop a lot of people from getting guns, or if we ban some type of guns or some type of amenities to guns, for example, debate that was after the Las Vegas shooting, then this becomes isolating and eliminating those particular elements, appendages to firearms. It's not going to stop them, right? Because then we have people running through the streets stabbing people. We may have people running through the streets hitting people with baseball bats or tire irons. So this type of mass type of killing is a phenomenon that I think that we really need to study across the board and across the country, come up with some type of definition and figure out what it is. Study it, research it, right? Because I think that the mass killing is just an easier way to kill people from a distance. In order to stab someone, you have to chase them down. And I'm not trying to make light of this, but it's so much simpler and easier to shoot someone in comparison to stabbing them, right? We have to chase people down. Ability for mass casualties, more people injured and or killed, is greatly increased when you use a firearm, particularly an automatic firearm. So this is what has to be looked at, and I'm hoping that more people will take this seriously. So the reason I really want to talk about this is to really kind of focus in on what we can do in order to help eliminate the problem. I think that the legislatures across the state, across the country, really need to focus in on this problem. We're going to have more copycats, more mentally disturbed people who are going to want to hurt people, and things like that. So this stuff has to be really researched and looked into, and we really have to develop some type of situation in order to solve it. In light of what happened recently in Virginia, there was a member of the legislature there who was quoted as saying that now he's ready. State Senator John S. Edwards, a rural district Democrat who helped stop the bill in 2008, has a different read today. I think we're ready, he said. Now, what is he talking about before 2008? Well, 2007, it was the Virginia Tech shooting. Hard to believe it was that long ago, 2007, but 2007, Virginia Tech gets shot up. A lot of people at that time wanted to have some reforms, but they couldn't bring about the reforms. And just to read from you, the New York Times, this is written June 4, 2019. After a gunman killed 32 people at Virginia Tech in 2007, a bill to require mandatory background checks for firearms at gun shows failed to make it out of the committee in the Virginia State Senate. It was blocked by all the Republicans on the committee and two Democrats who controlled the chamber at that time. Now, more than a decade later, after a gunman killed 12 people in Virginia Beach last week, a similar background check bill is being proposed as part of a package of legislation to be considered special session, which the governor called for on Tuesday. Now, to continue reading, State Senator John S. Edwards is now saying that that he's ready. The politics around guns have changed recently in years, recast by a burst of student activism, deep-pocketed allies, and steady dirge of grim headlines from schools, churches, concerts, and now in the Virginia Beach Municipal Building. From 2007, there's been more shootings at concerts, schools, etc., etc., and now they're ready to do something about it. I suppose the saying better late than never can apply, but I think it's disgusting and despicable that this has gone on and that our politicians have been getting away with this and they're inact. More people really had to step up to the plate. We need politicians to step up now and do something now. What else is going on as far as politicians trying to fix the problem? Well, the House, this is according to a Reuters article, February 27, 2019, the House has approved expanded background checks for gun sales. So they have recently approved a bill called the Background Check Bill, essentially. It was approved 240-190 vote. It's the first gun control measure taken by the Democrats since they regained control of the House in 2018. So they want to expand this idea of background checks. Depending on what study you read, 85-90% of American population, you can read this in Gallup polls, believe in some type of universal background checks to stop this type of situation where people can just go to gun shows or whatever, buy or sell a gun to someone else through a private vendor or however else they're doing it, getting around it, and they want some kind of tighter controls, background checks when it comes to being able to do this. However, the bill is going to face opposition when it gets to the Republican-controlled Senate. And the president has already said that he would not sign this particular bill. The White House, once again reading from Reuters, the White House said on Monday that Trump's advisor would recommend the president veto the legislation because it would apply burdens and requirements that are incompatible with Second Amendment guarantee of the right of an individual to be keep and to bear arms. I may talk about this in another podcast, but I do believe that this hyper-gun culture. Now, let me just say this outright. You know, I carry mine mostly all the time. Anytime I leave the house, I'm usually armed. But carry mine not because I have this strict adherence and love for the Second Amendment. I carry it because I know other people are carrying it. So if other people are carrying it, you know, I don't want to be a victim, right? So I'm just going to be honest. That's mostly the reason why I carry it. I don't want to become a victim of being robbed or whatever. But I do think that this adherence, this love, affiliation, this fantasy with the Second Amendment, I think is really dangerous. And I think it's really kind of pathetic, in all honesty. I mean, listen, you want to be armed okay at all times. I don't see that. Maybe I won't go down that road. You want to be armed, you want to have a gun, then that's your prerogative. That's okay, whatever. But, you know, I just don't see the need for it at all times. So this love that people have to keep and bear arms, I don't think is really... And listen, I'm not a constitutional scholar, but I don't believe really rests on the strict adherence and understanding of the Constitution, in which those times, architecture of the Constitution, were really concerned about people walking around with guns on their hips. They were concerned about a militia in which they were able to regulate. They wanted to regulate a militia and have them make sure that the militia was capable and ready to be able to defend the needs of the nation. So that's what I think, and that's what I've read a number of times. I'll leave it to those who are more attuned into the Second Amendment, legal scholars, etc., to have that debate. But I personally don't think that it was meant for... I don't think the framers of the Constitution meant it for what's going on today. And I certainly think that they would have an issue and a problem not being able to go to a concert, not being able to go to a school, having lockdown drills and all this kind of craziness because we can't decide on how we want to keep the schools and things like that safe. To continue on, and it's a segue into how we can't, what other methods are being done. So that's what Congress is doing. What are schools doing, right? So in Florida, they just passed a bill, was signed into law by the governor, that teachers there can be armed. May 2nd, 2019 from NPR, Florida approves bill allowing classroom teachers to be armed. A lot of stipulations in it. What I don't like about these particular stipulations is that it looked like it was going to go through. The Democrats in the state of Florida wanted to put at least 20 amendments into the bill, and all of those amendments were rejected. One of the amendments in particular that I really wish it would have gotten through was this item of implicit bias. What I'm fearful of a number of things about teachers being armed. According to this bill, they will have to get training, psychological evaluations, and all kind of stuff. That's great. That's certainly a step in the right direction. I think that they should also be included in implicit bias training. If you listen to my podcast about that, I talked about how teachers are already receiving it. I don't know about the state of Florida if they're not receiving implicit bias training, but they should be receiving that type of training. They should be receiving that type of training regardless of whether they're going to carry a firearm or not. In the realm of disparate types of punishment that are given to black and brown kids, then I think that implicit bias training should be the order of the day. Put a gun in the classroom where a teacher now is fearful of a large black student, large Hispanic student, large white student, whatever. And the student then feels as if he wants to get into the teacher's face. And the teacher now feels that he has now another tool at his disposal into taking matters into his own hands. And he could then be vindicated because he's on the stand your ground law. Or particularly in the state of Connecticut, I would assume something is similar in the state of Florida, where if two students are fighting, then the teacher can legally use force to break them up, to stop them from fighting and or to stop one student from attacking another student. Teachers are usually have that ability to use force, physical force, putting his hands on one student in order to stop another student from attacking another or one from attacking a teacher or to break up students from fighting, right? That's the legal justification for why and when a teacher can use force. Now you put that put a gun into the classroom. I think that these all can be recipes for disaster, and I don't think that they're very wise, and I don't think that they're very well thought through. And I'm quite sure that they talk through all these type of measures. Democrats try to bring these type of measures to their attention, and I don't think that it's good. I'm not in favor of putting guns in the classroom. According to this article, teachers would have to pass a 144-hour training session before they could be armed. Employees at 40 of the state's 67 counties have already enrolled or plan to enroll in this training course, right? So you can go to the National Conference of State Legislatures and you can read about different states. There's 19 states that have, if you get special permission from the school authority, which Connecticut is one, I only mention that because that's where I am. 19 states, people in those particular states can carry weapons, firearms, onto school grounds if you get permission from the school administrators. There's four states where all you need is concealed permit carry. School employees, there's six states. You can, guys can read through that. I also teach chess, joined in with a friend of mine, teach chess at a local high school, now a local grammar school, K through 8 school. It's very discomforting for me to walk around this school without my firearm on, right? I used to carry all the time, but I can't carry when I go to that school. If I get special permission, then I can carry. And I have my concealed carry permit in the state of Connecticut. I'm also a former police officer carrying under that legislation as well. Depending on where you live at, this is a growing trend where they're arming teachers. They want teachers armed. They want someone in the school armed. I think that the best way to do it is to make sure that in order to keep schools and students safe is to have an armed security guard. Maybe think that that is a deterrent in and of itself. Now, you have to make sure that that security guard is going to do his job. There was the former SRO from that Parkland shooting is just been charged with, I believe, three counts. He lied in his report, failure to protect students, and was arrested or held a $102,000 bond. Because he did not go into the Parkland school and to help to eliminate the threat. So I think that that's terrible on his part. So you have to make sure that these people are going to do what they're going to do. So let me just finish this up, wrap this up and say, okay, so we took a look at the problems that I think that are going on. Number one, we have a definition problem. We don't know what we're talking about, and this skews all of the research. If you're pro-gun, if you're not pro-gun, then we don't know how many mass shootings are going on. We don't know how many mass killings are going on because the definition changes the outcome. Is it a mass shooting? Is it an active shooter? The active shooter, that definition is out there as well. The situation is currently rapidly evolving where someone is shooting at people, injuring and killing people. So that these definitions have to be ironed out so we can all understand what we're talking about. This is not a phenomenon that's going on in the United States. We talked about the psychology of these young males who feel aggrieved for whatever reasons, for a number of reasons. They're taking out their anger and their frustrations on the public. I and you want to be able to go to a restaurant, be able to sit there peaceably with our loved one and not have to duck under a table or lock ourselves in the bathroom or run screaming and shouting out. So something needs to be done about this. Years after the Virginia Tech shooting, legislatures begin to change their mind in the state of Virginia, right? They have that too, Virginia Beach, just a couple weeks ago. And then they also had Virginia Tech down in 2007. So now they're saying, okay, now we're ready. Now we're ready to do something about this. I mean, this is why nobody has respect and love for Congress, because they can't seem to get anything done. They vote along these party lines always. It's just ridiculous. We have to protect our children. We have to protect our society. We have to do something. We have to do something. Kudos to the legislature who passed these bump stock laws and who have taken some type of legislation to do background checks and things like that. You as the public, keep pushing, keep writing your legislatures, keep writing your members of Congress. Let them know what you want done. Let them know what you want done. And if they don't get these things done, then vote them out of office. You can't continue to stick around in office. No one's going to take your guns. No one's going after these things. And I really want to talk about that in part two of this series. No one's out to take them. And it's just sad and pathetic that that's going on. Continue to push for your legislature to do something about it. Continue to read and research. I hope I gave you guys some good information today. What should I do during mass shootings? Let's just discuss that for a couple seconds here. What should I do during mass shooting, right? I'm at the mall, I'm at a store, I'm at a restaurant. And what should I do? First of all, I think that if you have the right to carry a firearm, I think you should carry a firearm. Let me say that explicitly. I think that if you have the right to carry a firearm, if you're not under any type of restrictions or indictments or protective orders, or you're a member of the society in good standing, I think that you should carry a firearm. Why should you carry a firearm? Right, so you won't become a victim of robbery, you won't become a victim of some punk, you won't become a victim of some mass shooter. So I think that's really, really a big reason, right? I think you can also take control of a situation, and I think that you should be. Now, this is all if you have the temperament to do it. If you don't have the temperament to do it, right, then I think that should be taken into consideration for every type of person who tries to get a gun, right? They ought to have a psychological evaluation to get a gun permit. Not just the question is often asked, have you ever been hospitalized in the last few weeks or month or year or so? I don't think that answers the question of one's mental status, right? Because people are getting guns who have never been hospitalized and going out and shooting people. So I think that there should be some type of psychological evaluation prior to receiving a gun permit and prior to being able to actually purchase a weapon. But that's a discussion for another day. So if you're in a place, in a situation, and something breaks out, then of course I think you should shelter in place. If you can, run out the back door. If you can, listen, there is no exact way to do it. If you can get away, get away. If you can lock yourself in a place, then lock yourself in a place. Obviously, get low, protect your loved ones and things like that. But there is no definitive way and answer as to what you can and should be doing if and when you're in a situation where a shooter comes in. Know your procedures. If you work in a business, corporation, know your business. Business or corporation, know your procedures. If they have an active shooter drill, follow that to the T, to the letter. If you work for a company and they don't have some type of active shooter scenario, ask them to put one and implement one for you. You can coordinate with your local police department and or some probably some gun agency, and they can help you walk you through what you should and should not do during an active shooter and how you can stay safe. Every place of business, a mall, hospital, a library, whatever, should have some type of plan for an active shooter. They have plans for fire drills. Now this is what we have to plan for. I don't think that this is good. This phenomenon is going away. As I read from you from the RAND Corporation, .org, we don't know if it's going away. We don't know if it's we don't know if it's increasing or staying the same. And why don't we know? Because the definitions change. Because we're looking for different criteria. Two people are dead. Three people are dead. Well, you got one person dead, but 20 people are injured by gunfire. Well, that doesn't really count. So we're not gonna look at that. So we really have to define what we're talking about here. Once again, if you're in a situation, if you work for a business corporation, follow the rules that they have. If you don't work in a place and they don't have some type of emergency type of drill, fire drills, active shooter drills, then you should ask them to implement one. Coordinate with your local police department in order to do that. And so that's it, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. Let me know what I'm doing right. Let me know what I'm doing wrong. Let me hear from you. I can be reached at hunterpoliceconsulting@gmail.com. hunterpoliceconsulting@gmail.com. Twitter, Captain L. Hunter. Instagram, Big L. Hunter. I'm also on Facebook, Lawrence Hunter. HunterPoliceTraining.com is also on Facebook, Hunter Police Consulting. Hunter Police Training is my website. Just visit me on that. Let me know what I'm doing right. Let me know what I'm doing wrong. Still in business. You have a promotional opportunity coming up. Let me know. Let me hear from you. And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. I'll talk to you next time. We're going to continue the series on gun violence. The next chapter we're going to look at is what I believe to be the racist history of gun protection and who can and cannot have a weapon and firearm, and looking at the Second Amendment and all that kind of stuff. So that's it, ladies and gentlemen. Take care. I'll talk to you later. Bye.